If you have a Bible, go to Joshua chapter 3. And the title of today's message, I like to put titles on them, is Miracles in the Morning. Miracles in the Morning. As we're turning there, I'll kind of set us up for this a little bit. So thoroughly enjoyed the barbecue last week. Yes, it was pretty good, wasn't it? Yeah, pretty solid. It was kind of an archetypal, straightforward Northern Irish barbecue. Okay, I'm from Hollywood. So someone will always show up with like halloumi or some nonsense, right? Which I just can't abide. Like, you can't be doing that, okay? Like, this was proper, okay? It was burgers, sausages, desserts, and torrential rain, like God intended, okay? That's what we're supposed to do. But we definitely felt that autumn had arrived. You know, we realized that. We put a barbecue in September. We realized that is definitely autumn. That's kind of where we're starting this thing off, starting with seasons. Anybody else sort of have that moment when autumn arrives and the house suddenly is transformed? Yes? Yankee candles manifest as if from nowhere, okay? It's pumpkin spice, whatever that is. I didn't know pumpkin was a spice. So pumpkin spice, fluffy socks, okay? Yes? Reruns of New Girl. And that's just me. That's literally just me, okay? That's our autumn. We are in autumn season, everybody. Autumn has arrived. And I kind of feel like, you know, for me, the cycle of church, it kind of starts, like, that's just the reality, the way our calendar is built here in the Western world. The calendar is built kind of from September through, and you have a couple of key markers. September, January are kind of the key marker points of the year. There's a seasonal change, and there are natural seasons that exist. And the Bible has this concept. You have these feasts in the Bible, and they're built around natural seasons. And ours look a little bit different, but nonetheless, we have seasons. And when you have new seasons starting, you also have opportunities. You have an opportunity to assess and adapt and plan and think, well, what is God calling us into? Because God is calling us into something. God knows that there are seasons, and he has plans for the season ahead. God has something for us in this next season of life in this church. God is not just doing the same old thing. I think God likes things that rhyme, but I don't think he likes things that repeat. He does not just want you to go through the same old in the season ahead. He doesn't just want things to look the exact same as they did, and we just start it up again, and we go through the motions again. He wants something more for us. Like he wants glory to glory. He wants things to grow and develop. He actually wants us to take ground and step forward and step out and move into the more that he has for us. Do we believe that in church this morning? Yes, we do. Craig believes it. That's good. That'll do for me. And this message is kind of leaning into preparing for and being ready for that. That's where I want to kind of take it. Because we call it miracles in the morning, and we can get all excited about the miracles in the morning, but maybe there's something that needs done the night before. Maybe there's something that needs done in preparation. If we believe that God has breakthrough, if God has a plan, if he has a purpose, if he has something for us in the season ahead, then perhaps there is something that he wants us to do which will position us as individuals and as a body to step into that, to be ready for that. There's maybe something that we are called to do right now in order to be ready for the season ahead. Maybe it's not just an automatic thing. Maybe we have a part to play in this. And so Joshua chapter 3, this is where we kind of find the children of Israel. They are on the verge of the promised land. They have been brought to the verge, the starting point of a new season. They're not in the promised land yet. They're just before it. And they've had all this good stuff happen, and the spies have been sent in. If you know the story of Joshua, they send in two spies, and they're believing spies. So they come back and they go, yep, look, God has given us this place. Like, their hearts are melting. We are ready to go. And I'm going to read the first couple of verses here from Joshua 3, because this is where we are. And they sound innocuous, but they're actually pretty important. So Joshua 3, verse 1 and 2, it says the following. It says, then Joshua rose early in the morning, and they set out from Shittim. That was not a swear word. That is what it's called, okay? And they came to the Jordan, and he and all the people of Israel, and they lodged there before they passed over. And at the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp. Now, that doesn't sound like very exciting. Okay, they moved, and people went through the camp. What's going on? Well, geography matters in the Bible, everybody. Okay, the geography here is important. They move from a place that's a few miles away from the River of Jordan, and then they come right up to the banks of the River Jordan. So they're seeing something different. They were a few miles away, and now they can literally see the River Jordan. And I don't know about you, whenever you kind of picture this moment, at least in my head, if you ever read like a children's storybook Bible, you sort of imagine, I sort of imagine like a 10 meter wide river. That's kind of roughly what you're thinking that they're seeing. It's a river. It's not a stream. You're not picturing something massive. Well, what we're told actually further down in verse 15 is that the banks of the river were overflowing, right? So you have what is actually, what they're looking at is about a mile wide. As this fast-flowing, rushing river, extremely dangerous, right? This is not an easy place to stand and imagine crossing, right? If you picture something more like, say, Strangford Lock, right? That's kind of what they're looking at if you've been there. You know, it's like, okay, this is a substantial barrier here. This is not some sort of small one. This is serious. And unlike Strangford Lock, they can't go round it. They can't just go up to the top, right? I mean, you have to go through Ards, slightly dodgy, but nonetheless, it can be done. They couldn't go round this river. This was the only way through. And they've got a million people, and they've got kids, and they've got equipment, and they've got donkeys and wagons and all of this stuff. And yeah, they can maybe send over a few guys on a boat or whatever, like they could do scouting missions. But to get the nation of Israel across this river, they've got a problem, right? Like, they can't bridge it, they can't ford it, what are they going to do? And so think about the scene, right? They have had this great report, we're going to take the land, amen, yes, we're going to do that. Oh, their hearts are all melting because of us, amen. We're going to stand and move in faith, we're going to get up to the edge of this river, come on, yes, let's go for it. And they get there, and the river in front of them is this massive problem that they cannot overcome before they even get in. And I think what's really interesting here is that God brings them to this place and then he doesn't do anything for 3 days. He just lets them sit and look at this river for a 3-day period and says nothing, like nothing happens. And I imagine that they're just sitting there and they're sort of looking and it gradually becomes very, sort of tangible and real to them that this is a real problem. Like they're just envisioning and seeing this river. It's so wide, they can't get around all of that. Like they have all of these issues. And they're probably even thinking further. They go, well, if we do get across, then actually we're trapped behind enemy lines. Like we can't get out. We're not a professional army. These guys have fortresses and all of that. They're starting to realize that this challenge is vastly beyond them. God leaves them there for a 3-day period. And I think he's doing something in them. I think he's doing something important in them. What I think he's doing is this. A lot of the time, God wants to make sure that our faith is not arrogance. A lot of the time, God wants to make sure that we are actually walking in faith and we're not just walking in brashness. We're not just walking in self-reliance. Sometimes faith can get misconstrued as arrogance, and that's not right. We see that in the Bible. But there is a real potential for us as human beings to walk in pride, to become prideful, particularly when you're in a situation like this where God is using the people and God's speaking to the people and he's given them good promises. And you can kind of spiritualize your pride. You can go, oh, yeah, like I am the man. Like we can do this. We are awesome. We are able to do that. And I think God just likes to remind us from time to time that we are completely helpless without him. From time to time, he just puts us in that place. He just goes, let's just leave you in front of that problem for a little bit on your own, and you'll recognize that actually you on your own are not all that. And this can be a temptation for us corporately. I think about us as a church. We're incredibly blessed in this church. Like we really are. I'm just saying this at a personal level. Like, I love the teaching of this church. I think we're really blessed with Craig as teaching us weekly. I think you don't build a following like that if you're not carrying something that's really powerful. There's something happening there. We're blessed in worship. We have an incredible team, whether it's our regulars or the guys that come in. Like, they're anointed and quality and they serve with diligence. Like, it's awesome. I just heard from Lawrence. Lawrence and Millie, both of them are like national level youth and young people leaders. Like in our church, a church of this size, that's pretty remarkable. Even if I look around the congregation, the quality of people and the generosity of spirit and the willingness to serve and all of the stuff, like this is a great church. Like, I really believe that. Okay, I know I drag it down a notch or two, okay? But broadly speaking, like, this is a great church. It's wonderful to be here. One of the temptations that we will face, and we can face, is that we get a little bit too excited about us. We can get a little bit too excited and go, do you know what? We've really got something here. We're pretty sufficient. Our services are awesome. You should come check them out. Our church is great. Our teaching is great. Like our people are awesome. And sometimes, and it is possible, and I have seen this, it can be easy to be more excited about the church of God than the God of the church. Sometimes it's possible to love the church, but in a way that actually puts it before God. And sometimes we just need to remember and recognize that in and of ourselves, guys, we are not enough. We are not enough. We cannot do this on our own. Gifting is great. Gifting is marvelous, right? Joshua is a gifted leader. He is a warrior who has won battles. He was sent as one of the original spies, and he was one of the two believing spies of the original 12 that actually had faith, that actually believed that God could do this. He was a man who was trained by Moses. He was a prophet. He heard the voice of God. Like, great guy, a gifted leader. But standing in the banks of that river, they needed more than gifting to get across. They needed something extra. Now, God was going to use him, use his gifting. It's not either or. But if Joshua just stood there and said, well, look, I'm a good leader. I've got the experience. I've got the nous. I've got the know-how. I've got it together. I could figure this out. There is no way at all that they are going to get across that river. He cannot get them there. All the gifting in the world is not getting them into the promised land. And it's easy to get impressed with ourselves and easy to get impressed with our own spirituality or our own quality or our own excellence. It is possible to do it. Anybody else here actually attempted to walk on water? Okay? No? You guys lack faith. Okay, why? Like, you should at least have a go, okay? Now, I regret to inform you, I absolutely have, okay? I have. One time when I was quite a lot younger, I had done a fast, and I was feeling pretty darn spiritual, I'm going to be honest, right? Okay, I was like, and I was at the end of it, and I was going for a walk. It was along Belfast Lough, going for a walk, and I just thought, if I'm ever going to do this, now's the time. Like, now's the time. I could have a go. I had just visions of Northern Ireland coming to faith because this guy crossed from Hollywood to Carrickfergus over the Lough. That's what I was expecting, right? The quick glance around, right? Didn't see anyone. So I just went, right, and just, I marched into the sea. I did. And I immediately felt like the presence of God, like goosebumps, primarily in my feet, I'm going to be honest, which were quite damp at this point, right? I realized, oh, this is not working, right? And I backed out. And as I got out, I realized that a guy had come around the corner with his dog and was looking at me like I had two heads, right? So squelched home and didn't tell anyone about it until now. Okay, so you're the first ones to hear I have done that, right? But sometimes we think that we're more spiritual than we are. Sometimes we think that. Sometimes we think we're there. And I think that's why God leaves them here. I think that's what he's up to. I think that's what he's doing. I think he puts them there because you can be feeling spiritual and you can be feeling excited. And that's all well and good, but God just sometimes likes to say, do you know, you need to remember who's really driving this thing. You need to remember who's really behind this thing. There is something healthy in that, in recognizing that all of your talents, all of your gifting, all of your knowledge, all of the stuff, the experience that you've built, the service that you've offered to God, all of it good. Not saying any of it's bad. All of it good. Without him is completely insufficient for what he has called you to do. It is not enough. It will not do it. You need more than you can conjure up. You need more than your own capability. You need more than your own capacity. You need the presence and power of God. And sometimes God creates a delay so he can create dependence. He just make you go, look, you actually can't do this. Just let's remember that. You know, if we look at our nation right now, we look at where we're at and we see the secularization that's going on and the attacks that seem to be coming from every angle, culturally, politically, socially, all of this stuff. We look at even the church and it feels like the church is in a difficult place in our province. I think there's real challenges that we're facing. Like, you know, we look at that and we kind of go, right, well what are we going to do about that? I mean, what's going to fix that? We can't sort of go, oh, well, at least the jokes were funny in church this morning. You know, of course they were. They were hilarious, right? They were brilliant. Obviously, that one wasn't okay. Yeah, that was a bad one. It didn't land. But, you know, we can imagine that, right? But that's not going to do anything compared to what we're facing. We're standing in front of this great river, this impenetrable barrier, this societal decay and destruction and loss of our heritage and our Christian faith in this land. And like we're in front of that. And if God doesn't show up, if God doesn't step into the arena and do something, doesn't matter how great we are, guys, we're finished. Like, we have nothing that can get us across that river, Jordan. We cannot do it. And before the people of God see the power of God, sometimes they just need to recognize their poverty without him. Like, sometimes we just need to recognize, actually, this is going to take more than I can offer. And that's a good thing, because God is never dependent on us in these things. So just you know, that is a healthy thing. God's not looking around for talent, right? He's not short of ability. One of my favorite stories in church history, especially when I preach poorly, actually, is the story of George Whitefield. George Whitefield is one of the greatest evangelists ever, mightily used by God in the First Great Awakening. Sort of, actually was the one that got John Wesley into preaching in fields. And he did an amazing amount of ministry on both sides of the Atlantic, crossed it 13 times by sailboat. 90% of the colonies had heard him preach live. Just remarkable, remarkable stuff that happened. But there's a story of a guy called Samuel Davies, sort of earlier on in Whitefield's ministry, had heard of him. He was an American guy, he was a preacher, but was traveling over to England and had this horrific journey over on this sailboat, and it was storms the whole way and shipwreck nearly, and they almost all died, right? Anyway, he manages to get there and he goes to hear Whitefield preach, and he wrote the following. He said, "It became clear to me quite soon in the service that Mr. Whitefield must have had an exceptionally busy week. Obviously, he had not had time to prepare his sermon properly. From the standpoint of construction and ordering of thought, it was very deficient and defective. It was a poor sermon. But the unction that attended it, the unction, that's the presence and the power of God, the unction that attended it was such that I would gladly risk the rigors of shipwreck in the Atlantic many times over in order to be there just to come under its gracious influence." I was not advocating for not moving in gifting, but why were people flocking to hear this guy? What was going on? Were they there to hear a great preacher? No. They were there to meet God. God was with them. God was on him. God was moving. And I know, I'm absolutely confident, I'm echoing Craig's heart here. We don't want to be a church that is primarily dependent on gifting. Like, we just don't. We don't want to do that. We want to have gifting. We want things to work well. We want to prep well. But we want to be dependent on God. I want us to be more concerned that God would show up than that the band would show up on a Sunday. Like, if we show up and no one's here, we go, "Well, is God here?" Yes, he is. That's enough for us. I want to be a church like that. And I think if we want to be a church that sees the rivers parted, if we want to see a church, be a church that sees the miraculous, we need more than us. We need him. We need him to move. I want people to say of this church, that's the church that God goes to. I don't want them to say it's a great gifting church, or they're very talented there. I want them to say God goes to that church. That's why we're there. Now, it's not to say they don't do anything, right? They actually do some specific stuff down. We'll read from verse 5 to verse 8, because we'll see how this progresses. It says in verse 5, "Then Joshua said to the people, 'Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you.' And Joshua said to the priests, 'Take up the Ark of the Covenant and pass on before the people.' So they took up the Ark of the Covenant and went before the people. Then the Lord said to Joshua, 'Today I will begin to exalt you in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. And as for you, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Covenant, when you come to the brink of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan.'" So we've got to imagine this scene rightly once again, right? Got to try and picture it properly. They're launching an invasion. That's the scenario here. Into a land that's full of giants, in which they are absolutely, by all objective measures, the inferior party, right? They're the weaker army in this scenario, right? There's a sense of fear on the enemy, but at the same time, like, they're not as equipped, they're not as good. So it's kind of like D-Day, right? That's kind of what's going on here. Imagine the allies, except actually the allies would have been weaker in this scenario. So imagine them sitting around planning their invasion. And Churchill speaks up and goes, right, we've got the plan here, boys, got it figured out. Here's what we're going to do. We're all going to go and be extra holy for a day. Then we're going to get the Archbishop. We're going to send him into the channel. We're going to have a communion service. And then we'll just walk across. Sound good? Right, let's go. Like that's the kind of plan that they're going for, right? This is obviously a modernized Christian version. But that's basically the strategy. What are they told to do, right? They can't do it on their own. So Joshua says, consecrate yourselves. Like, go be holy for a day. Extra time to focus on God. Then we're going to take the Ark of the Covenant. We're just going to go stand in the river. And I think, like, well, you would sort of like something a bit fancier. Like if I was there, I would like a better plan than that personally. If I was sitting there, I'd be like, right, God could just give us some brilliant idea. And God goes, no, just consecrate yourselves and go stand in the river with the Ark of the Covenant. The point is very clear here. Like, strategy is not enough. Strategy was not sufficient. There was no strategy that they could come up with that was going to work in this scenario. So what was the point in trying to think of one? It's very clear that if what they needed was a completely supernatural intervention of God, if that was what was required, which was what was required, then their sole job is to be in the vicinity of God. Like, that's the plan, that's the strategy. If the only solution to the problem that we have is God showing up and doing a wonder, then all our job is to be near God. Like, to get ready to stand in the presence of God, to go after God, to pursue God. It's the same for us, right? There is no strategy. We can't get all of our boffins together, all of the Christian eggheads, and come up with a plan for seeing millions of people come back to Christ in our nation. It won't work. There's no strategy that can do it. There might be some strategic points along the way, and there's strategic things that they do along the way here. But the reality is that what they need is God to show up and do something earthquaking and flipping the world right side up. Like, that's what they needed. That's what we need. And if that's the case, then what do we need to do? We need to be ready to be around God. We need to be ready to be in the presence of God. We need to come close to God. And so they're told to do this thing. They're told to consecrate themselves. It says, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. It's kind of the thing I really want to press into in this. This is a kind of practical bit. Is that what we need more than anything else is fresh, like, consecration, I think, in the church for the season ahead. I think it's something, I mean that broadly, but also here locally. You know, I think that's something that we need. What does that mean? Well, consecrate, there's different words for it. You could say sanctify or set yourself apart or devote yourself, dedicate. But I think the best analogy actually is kind of marriage vows. I think that's a good analogy of trying to figure out what consecration is. We got married at 21, got married pretty young, pretty quickly. Obviously, Danny was struggling with temptation. personally offended that you're laughing at that. Thank you. Yeah, okay. No, we did. We got married young, but... when we got married, we took vows. And what are the vows? Is that a promise to love her and honor her, forsaking all others, be faithful to her? Those are like consecration vows. This idea of devoting yourself to one thing at the expense of everything else. Like, we're going after this one thing and not this other stuff. I'm devoted to this one person and not pursuing anyone else. That is consecration. That's what it's about. And this is something that God is calling them to do, to get ready for this. There's general sort of times of consecration in the Bible. There's sort of a general pattern of it in the Old Testament particularly, but even in the New Testament, we see that the people of God are themselves like a consecrated people. They're to be not follow idols. They're to be devoted to God and love God and serve God. They have all of these regular patterns of consecrating, devoting the firstborn to God or the first fruits of the harvest or items in the tabernacle. These things are consecrated. They're to be used for this one thing. They're to be for this one purpose and nothing else, right? So they have that. They also have these special moments of consecration. They have these moments where God goes, yeah, right, really consecrate yourselves, like where they do something special. We see a few of them. One of them is Exodus 19 before Moses goes up Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments. They're told to consecrate themselves. Happens twice in Joshua, once here and once after they actually lose a battle and they need the power of God to overcome their enemy. We see it before the Levites bring the Ark into Jerusalem. We kind of see it also in the New Testament. Actually, Paul and Barnabas were told, they're told to set them apart for the work that have called them to. It's this idea of consecration, right? And when we see those special moments of consecration, here's where we're going. It's always connected to two things. Always connected, at least one of the two things, often the two together. It's about encountering the presence of God and experiencing the power of God. Like those special moments of consecration, they're about God's presence and God's power. And I don't know about you this morning, but like I want that in the church. Like I want us to be a church like that. I want the church in our land to be like that. I want this church to be like that. I want to be the kind of church where you come in and there's like a weighty presence of the Lord in the place. Where it's like that tangible reality of God is really actually here. I want to see the power of God poured out in such a way that it's just undeniable. You know, where there's like the kind of signs and wonders that the media actually can't ignore anymore. Where there's people who are so far from God, whose lives are so radically changed, that it just demonstrates that God is really among us. I want us to be a church where it feels like the Spirit of God walks the aisles every Sunday. I want us to be the kind of church where it feels like that moment in the temple where the cloud comes down and the priests are unable to minister. It's like God is so tangible. All we can do is sit and acknowledge that. Like that, there's no, as I said, there's no strategy that can fix our nation. There's no gifting that can fix our nation. But the presence and the power of God can fix it. Like if God shows up in the church, that can do something that we just simply can't do on our own. It will do something that we cannot do on our own. And here's the thing. If that is the hope, if we all agree, look, we actually can't do this, we need God to do this, then what do we need to do as a church? We need to consecrate ourselves. We need to go, right, God, whatever it takes to get around your presence, whatever it takes to be near you, we're doing that. We're doing that as the people of God. That's our plan. That's our strategy. That's what we're going after. A lot of the time we want the presence, we want the power, but we do not want the preparation. We want the kind of demonstration of what God is doing, but we don't necessarily want the dedication to God. But if we want more, do we want more in the next season? Yes, we do. If we want more, then we need to consecrate ourselves. We need to go, right, what will it take to see more of God? Let me kind of land that corporately, bring things in. Because this is something they did together, right? There's power in doing things corporately. What they would have done was quite practical a lot of the time, and there's practical application. They would have actually washed probably bodies and clothes. There would have been ceremonial washing that went on. They would have possibly fasted. There would have been a period of abstinence as well. So that's kind of what they would have done. I don't think it necessarily looks like that for us, okay? Please do wash, okay? Not saying you don't need to. That's good. But it's about simple actions of purity and devotion. Simple actions, right? So I think a lot of the time for us, the thing that's really stopping us from moving into more of God, it's often quite simple stuff. It's simple, small sins that we don't take a lot of notice of. That idea of washing, it's not about even making a sacrifice. It's just acknowledging there's some stuff I want to deal with. You know, so a lot of the time it's not like actual, you know, adultery in the church, but it might just be lust of the eyes, or it might just be, you know, looking that little bit too long, or going somewhere you shouldn't go with your, you know, your mind or whatever. Like that could be the thing. A lot of the time it's not, you know, hatred for someone. It's just that subtle gossip. There's little things that, you know you shouldn't be doing, but it's actually hindering you from entering into more of the presence and power of God. You know, sometimes it's just those little tiny things. It's not neglect of God. It can be loss of the first love. If we want more of God, we've got to cleanse those things. It's also enhanced devotion. I think these were serious days where they went, we're really focusing on God here. You know, we've talked about our midweek prayer, and Craig's talked about that. I think it's worth us as a church trying to go, right, is there a way we can make that sometimes? You know, is there a way that we can press in corporately together? And so, some of you just practically not able, you're working or whatever. Like, I totally get that. You've got kids' dinners to do that. I'm not saying that. But you know, if there is a way to sometimes be involved in that, that is an act of consecration. Like it is. And if you can't do it, well, there's other ways you could take part. We've encouraged people in that to consider Wednesdays as a day when they fast. Depends what kind of fasting you're able to do, but some form of fasting is good. Like, it's a good thing. You could do that on a Wednesday, even if you can't make the prayer meeting. You could take time to pray for the church and what God's doing here. Pray for the area. Pray for our nation. Pray for those things. Let me step on a few toes here. Showing up to church on time might be an act of consecration. Okay? Just throw that one out there and hide behind the pulpit here, okay? It is. Now, again, I get it, right? You've got kids, traffic, all that. There's no condemnation. If you're in the church, we're delighted you're here, okay? Where there's no judgment. Some people might judge you. I don't judge you, okay? Like, it's not about that. But can you imagine if we had in the room, everybody was here, and for 2-3 minutes before the service, when that countdown music's on, we're just going, Lord, I'm here to seek your face. Lord, I'm coming after you in a fresh measure this morning. I'm zoning in on you. Like, I think that would make an impact, guys. I'm just going to throw that out. It would do something. To be honest, I think if we want to go further in worship and experience more of God in our services, I actually don't think it's on the team. I actually think it might be on us. It might be on our readiness. The best churches in the world, the people show up are ready to engage with God. They really do. And I think that would be something that could impact us and move us. The good thing about this is, final last wee thing here. You actually can't outgive God in this stuff. You really can't. It seems very silly is not the right term. It seems too easy, right? They're standing at this impenetrable barrier, this uncrossable river, and they kind of go and be a bit extra holy for a day, and God parts the waters. It seems like too little. And that's because it's very simple. It's not about earning, but it is about pursuing, right? This is not something we work up and earn. I'll tell you a story from my own life. When I was 17, I'd been sort of properly, I grew up in a Christian family, properly walking with God for about a year. And at 17, I just had this sense of, like, I really think God wants more for me. I don't know what that is, but I just have this spiritual hunger, this spiritual longing, and I want to see God do more. And we had a youth conference on in the church, or we had a youth conference that was coming up in the church, and I was just like, God, I want you to do something in my life. I really do. So I said, right, I'm going to pray an hour a day for the week leading up to that. I don't even think it was a full, I think it was 5 days. I think I started on the Monday and went through to kind of the start of the conference, which was the Friday. And on the Saturday evening of the conference, I walked into the room. By the way, the whole prayer leading up to it, I felt like nothing at all, right? Okay, I did not know how to pray for an hour. I was just quietly mumbling in my room, like that was kind of it. My dad came in and said, you all right? You know, I said, yep, just praying. Probably thought, I right, you know, like, yeah. But walked in on the Saturday evening. I don't know how it was for everybody else, but for me, the moment I walked in, I was like, God is in this place. Like God's here. There was just something tangible. I got prayed for at the end, and I just got blown away by the power of God and mighty encounter with God. It transformed my walk with God forever. I got up. I couldn't stop talking to people about God. I couldn't stop praying and getting into the Bible. And it was literally from that night on, people started to say, do you know what, you're called to ministry. It was God did something in my life. It was massive. It changed my life forever. Changed the entire course of my life. From what, like 5 times of praying for an hour a day? Like I didn't earn that, right? Okay, it's not like this was something that I built up. But there is something that God wants us to do. He does want us to go after it. You can't outgive him. If we consecrate ourselves, if we say, look, God, we're actually going after you, we're actually really going to get serious about it, I promise it will not be long before we start to see it. Because God is not sitting there going, right, you've got to fill up the cup, right? You've got to make sure that you've done enough. It's not that, but he does say, I do want you to get hungry. I do want you to get ready. I do want you to pursue, because I actually want to pour out my power upon you. I want to do this, but I also want you to be involved. I also want you to get ready. If there's going to be miracles in the morning, we need to consecrate, pursue, and go after God the night before. And I think that's what God wants us to do in the season ahead.